All right, good morning. This is Bio 231, Human Anatomy, and it's Wednesday, September 1st. And that leads me to think that, now don't forget, Monday's a holiday, so there's no class. Don't come to school Monday. People are finishing up the first practicum today, but a week from today is your first test. The first test, and it's over chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5. But not three. Three is embryology. So how are y'all doing on that, right? So you're aware next week is, a week from today is the first test. So today we're going to review a bunch for the test. And let's see, what do you need for the test? You need a Scantron. You need that quarter page Scantron, an 882. I don't know if somebody has an example. I've been told they're green colored. Is that green colored?
Yeah.
Yeah, green colored ones. Okay, that's a really good one. You can get the 882E, 882ES. There's also an 882E or 882 Lovas. That one doesn't work so well. That one has some ink colored in with the bubbles, so you can't see that the bubbles are labeled A, B, C, D, E, and that coloring sometimes messes up the Scantron reader. So try to get the one that just has the capital A, B, C, D, E all the way across and all those bubbles that you have to pencil in. And that's how I wrote the exams, with capital A, capital B for your various choices for the test, right? So that will make, you don't have to figure little A's from little B's and capital B's. You don't have to translate from capital letters to lowercase letters, right? Okay. So that's the best one to get. You also need a pencil and a good eraser. And how do you know if you have a good eraser? Make a mark on a piece of paper and erase it and see if it disappears. If it smudges, throw it away immediately. Don't bring it to the test because that could cost you points on the test. And I'll go over the test with you. Maybe we can catch some of those mistakes, but remember, smudges and stray marks on a test will usually end up with the wrong answer. And you're going to be taking board exams and things like that. There are a lot of tests you never get back, and you might not pass a board exam because you just made a smudge. Maybe you got all the answers right, but made a smudge on the test, and the reader didn't know how to read it. The machine that grades didn't know how to read it, right? And then you got to pay $600 to take the exam over again. So don't mess around, right? Practice filling out a test properly. All right, the other thing you need is a Cypress College picture ID, right? And so, or Fullerton College. So you need to show me that picture ID when you turn your test in, right? So that's on this syllabus, too. You got to have that. And that's another $2. So, if you know your student number, that's good. Yeah, so you can log into Blackboard, but you won't get a grade. Okay? You need that picture ID. So I'll hold your grades until you can show me that you are who you are. All right, so driver's license won't work. Cypress College and Fullerton College has worked out the validation of them. I mean, I have a student ID. It's got the validation sticker on the back. You guys can get them. It's that big a deal. And I think you just go over to administration. They can take a picture of you, and then maybe you have to bring your schedule over. It depends. I forget what I did the first time. Okay, so, and then you have all class period, hour and a half to take the test. Probably you won't need an hour and a half, so you can go until 10 minutes to noon. And, take that whole time. If you don't need that whole time, that's fine, but might as well take it, might as well use all the time that you can have. And the format of the test, okay, let's log into Blackboard, and I want to make sure everybody knows what the correct study material is for the test, right?
How many questions?
It's a little bit less than 100, I think, for the first test. They eventually will get up to 100 questions. All right, so we want to look for something that says Blackboard. All right, and I'm sure everybody knows how to log into Blackboard already, right, with a student number. Okay, then your super secret password. And where's anatomy? Here's an anatomy. Okay, let's see. Might be in course documents. How about lecture exam study guides? That's what you're interested in because a week from today is lecture exam. All right, so here we go. I don't care if it's secure or not. Okay, so lecture exam for exam one, here's for 2, 3, 4, and 5. So you got a lot of exams in here, so that's good. More the better. Right? Here is one, and this is without the exam figures. Right? This is just a text file. It's a really small file. Here is the one that contains even the exam figures from your textbook. So what would you want to do with that? Probably right-click, save target as, download it to your hard drive someplace. And where am I going to put it? I don't want to put it in Who Teaches 101. Ah, probably Dr. Goshi. Should we put it in there?
Yeah.
Confuse him? No, because I don't know where it is. I might get lost. We'll just put it on the desktop and then delete it later. All right, so this is almost a 7 megabyte file because it's got all those graphics in there. That's why a high-speed internet connection is a requirement of the class. So it still takes a couple seconds to download it. Okay. And so it's sitting around here someplace, and it's a PDF file. Okay. 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 Maybe I had to double-click. But I saw the hourglass. I thought it was actually loading. Let's see if it's there. If it's not there, you guys would be hurting. All right, so improvement. I say, well, let's forget about that. Okay, so this is for exam number one. So the chapters are 1, 2, 4, and 5, right? And you got the title of the chapters right there. Now, of course, there's very good learning activities in Blackboard, right? There's drag and drop and all that kind of stuff, a bunch of videos. The objectives I have in Blackboard, so for chapter 1, you got to read pages 1 through 13, just those pages. You don't have to read any additional pages. And within these pages right here, there are questions that say, check your understanding. Right, and you should be able to answer those questions off the top of your head pretty well. If you want to write them out the first time, you know, that would be really good. That might help you remember those things. And then I only want to check your understandings 1 through 5 and then number 7. The others are extraneous. You don't have to write those out. The exam figures, these are in the textbook. Figures 1.3, 1.4, 1.6, 1.7, and 1.8. All right, and you will find them also, all right here. I copied them off the book. I erased the labels. And then you can practice labeling each of these lead lines right here, and that's going to emulate what you might find on the test, right? It won't contain each one of these because I would have a couple thousand questions on the test, right? But I might have like 4 or 5 questions from this figure or maybe a couple from the next figure, which is what, 1.3b? Okay, so you would have to like label this region right here. Anybody recall what this region is called? That's the popliteal region. That's good, popliteal region. And for instance, what do we call this region right here by the ear? That's the otic region. I say otic, if you say otic, that's okay. Otic region, right, that means ear. Like the instrument that you use to look in somebody's ear is called an otoscope. So just know some of these regions that will help you throughout the whole class because a lot of other anatomy is named by these regional designations. All right, so we have, 4 or 5 pictures in Chapter 1. Make sure you can label these different planes, right? Sagittal, coronal, mid-sagittal. That's pretty easy. And then we got some cavities here. And most of these diagrams have drag and drop or some other kind of interactive exercise within Blackboard, right? So you can work with the paper copy or you can work with the electronic copy, and it should take you pretty much to the same place. But these are the exact figures that could be on the exam. Right, so the electronic are the handy to use if you're with your computer, but these are going to be the ones on the exam. And what do you notice about this figure right here compared to the one that's in your textbook? Black and white, right? Just grayscale. So don't memorize anatomy by color because they're just artificial colors in your textbook to help you understand what these are. But on the test, you have to know the relationships between these things. All right, so you got exam figures for every chapter. Where's the little button? Ah, here. Okay. So what else is important? Review questions. These are at the end of the chapter, end of chapter questions. right? I might lift those and put those on the test, so make sure you're familiar with those. And some short answer questions. These might take you a little bit longer, but these kinds of questions help you synthesize and remember information. All right, so that's really good. And the online questions that I have you study for the quiz, the online quiz, that will also help you prepare for the lecture exam. There might be some terminology or phrasing of questions, and then you're set to go. All right, so the lecture notes, the text files, if you write on those and you come to lecture, that will help you answer review questions. But I would do more than just look at your lecture notes for this particular class, because you have to learn a lot of language. You have to use the information. You use the information by answering questions, the online questions and the questions that are interspersed in the chapter, like the check your understanding and the end of chapter questions, and then you're going to be really good for the test. Okay? So more than just reviewing notes, for sure, in here. Because I don't know if that will give you enough facility to answer some of these questions. All right, but if you want to listen to the lectures again, that's fine, because you can find those online. Where are those located at? And, Dr. Minus J, Minus Gober, all right, Control-Enter. Okay. Yeah, look what you guys do to me. Okay, so you're Bio 231, right? So what do we have here? Fall 2010 lectures, click on that, and then you can download these files. It looks like the links didn't get established quite right, or I didn't put the right dates in there. All right, I'll check these links. Oh, it says August 18th. I just didn't relabel this link. Okay, but it, down over here it said August 18th, so you can see any of those. And if you want to listen to previous semesters, you can do that as well. Okay. Look at this right here. That might help you, because what's on the first test? Integument, right? So there I just discussed that exam figure that's in the book as a video, and it's captioned so you can practice spelling a little bit. So you can watch that. And that might be the only one that would be helpful for the first lecture exam, to look at that one. Yeah. Yeah. The figures on the exam, you'll have a figure just like what's on the study guide with the labels erased. But instead of a question mark, there's going to be a number, like it might be question number 55. And then there's going to be a word bank, and then you have to pick the correct label out of the word bank. And it's going to have A, B, C, D, E, or some combination, right? It could be a pretty long list, like A, B, C, D, E might be an answer for that number 55, and then just pencil in A, B, C, D, E on line number 55 of your Scantron. So it'll be like more like matching. Okay, you'll have a word bank. So it's not quite as hard as a practicum, because you have all the answers there. Okay? On the practicum, of course, you know, you have to come up with a term all by yourself. That's even a little bit more difficult. All right, so don't forget all four of these chapters right here, and then you're good for that first exam. And once you're done with that exam, the subsequent exams are not strictly cumulative. You don't have to really know, but some of the information does progress as you go through the class. Like, don't forget about the imaging planes or body regions, for instance, because we'll use that stuff. So the class is not cumulative, but basically you do have to remember stuff from one test to another. Yeah? Okay, say that again. Nervous tissue. You know what? This right here will define for you what's on the test. And so if there's a question on nervous tissue right here, that any of that stuff could be on the test. Anything in this study guide could be on the test. Yeah, well, let's take some time and look at that today. Okay, so we can look at some nervous tissue again today. We can maybe talk about integument again, something like that. Okay? Okay, so this is where the test is coming from. All right, and you got good drag and drop exercises and videos and things like that in Blackboard. Okay, what else should I say about the test? If you show up on time, you'll have the whole period to take it, right? If you're an hour late, then you only have a half hour to take it. So, I don't know, set the alarm clock, especially after a long holiday weekend. And hopefully I'm here right on time too. Oh, I got a lab at 7:30. I got to be here on time. Okay. So any other questions? That's a good question about nervous system. Let's go back and talk about some of that tissue stuff. Okay. So put that away. So you know where to find all those resources. So there's a lot of good study materials here. Okay, so let's just review a little of some histology. Let me turn maybe a couple of these lights off. No, that's a good one to keep on. I can't get it back on. How's that? Is that okay? How about there in the back? Is it, you're okay? That's maybe a little bit better. Okay, so remember, what are the four general kinds of tissues that make up your body? How many are there, first? There's only four, right? And the first one, what did we start with? Epithelium, right? It covers a surface, lines a cavity, for instance. And what's another one? Connective tissue. Another one is muscle for contraction. And then the fourth one we'll go over today is nervous tissue. It's for sending information very fast over long distances in your body. So for epithelium. How do we classify an epithelium? What are the two ways?
Layers.
By layers, number one, and then by shape, right? That's usually how we do it. There's a couple oddball epithelia around. Can you think of an oddball that doesn't fall into either of these categories very easily?
Transitional
is one, and then that pseudostratified is another, right? But everything else just falls nice and neatly pretty much into these categories, and you would combine these terms like stratified cuboidal or simple squamous, right, or simple columnar. And some of these epithelia have some pretty important functions, okay? And if it is a simple squamous epithelium, I want to talk about the function of a simple squamous epithelium. That would be what? Just like this one right here. So how thick is a simple squamous epithelium? Very thin. So that kind of epithelium is used where we want exchange from one side of the epithelium to the other to happen very fast or expediently, right? So this is hardly a barrier at all. So where we want exchange in the body, of course, is in our lungs. When we breathe air in to our lungs, we want that oxygen to be absorbed into our blood. And that's a nice simple squamous epithelium that makes up part of the lung so that oxygen can go across that epithelium without too much impedance. All right. Another place where we want exchange is in blood vessels. So something in the blood should be able to leave the blood within a capillary, and the capillary is made out of a simple squamous epithelium so that material can move back and forth very, very easily. Now, let's see if you run into a question. The epithelium that actually makes up a capillary and it lines a blood vessel, it lines the inside diameter of a blood vessel. Right, it's an epithelium, but it's got a special name because it's inside something. Does anybody know what that epithelium is called that's lining a blood vessel and actually makes the capillary? Okay, it's called an endothelium. Endothelium, because it's inside of a blood vessel. It's an epithelium, but since it's inside the blood vessel, we changed the name a little bit, signifying that it's lining the tube. Endothelium, it's what lines the tube. All right, so that's a good function of a simple squamous epithelium. All right, what about a stratified squamous epithelium? What the heck is that? Is that good for exchange?
No.
Way too thick. All right, as a matter of fact, since it is so thick, maybe you might think, well, it actually does the opposite process, right? It prevents things from moving across the epithelium, right? And indeed, that's true. So let's think of the cutaneous membrane, which is another name for skin. Right, and the top layer of skin is the epidermis, right? That's an epithelium. And what can you remember about the epithelium? What is its characteristics by cell shape and layers. Stratified, squamous epithelium. The epithelium is a stratified squamous, so it's not there for exchange. It actually acts as a barrier. It has the opposite effect, right? So why is it a barrier? What's it preventing from the outside from getting in? Bugs, like bacteria, viruses, fungi, things like that. It protects you from infection, but it also prevents something from going from the inside to the outside. What's that? Water prevents you from dehydrating. Right, so that's the purpose of that kind of epithelium. It acts more like a barrier. Protects you from dehydration and infection, going in those two directions. All right, so those are some good things to know about an epithelium. Okay. What's the name of a unicellular gland that you might find in a columnar epithelium? Yeah, a goblet cell. Right, so I don't know if this is an exam figure or not, but you should kind of be familiar with that. And a goblet cell is a secretory cell. It's secreting mucus, right onto this apical surface right here. There could be things like microvilli or cilia on this apical surface right here. What's the distinction between a cilium and a microvillus? Yeah, cilia is motility. Good key word, right? So for all your organelles, try to get at least one bullet point word that will describe what that organelle is doing. Cilia sweep. So it's going to sweep mucus someplace, and usually that mucus traps dust, like in our trachea, the cilia move. Now what about microvilli? What? Yeah, it's going to actually anchor the mucus. It's going to keep the mucus from moving around, right? For instance, this would be a good example of the cell that lines your stomach. That mucus is a really tough chemical, and acids can't destroy it. Digestive enzymes have a hard time destroying it, so that mucus lining on your stomach prevents your stomach from auto-digestion, because the stomach secretes very powerful acids and powerful enzymes, and that would just eat your stomach up. But the mucus from these goblet cells protect your stomach from being digested, and it's these microvilli that help anchor the mucus in place to protect your stomach. And the other thing is that somebody said very well, it acts as a way to increase the surface area of this cell. And if there's one term for surface area, one everyday term that I want you to take with you is, what is a good way to think of surface area in terms of a functional part of a building right here? In one word. And maybe I forgot to show you this. No, I think I did. Surface area. What's the surface area, for instance, of this piece of paper right here? It would be the width times the height. That's the surface area, so 8.5 by 11 inches. I don't have my calculator here to know exactly what the square inches of this surface area is. All right, so that's sort of a small surface area on a piece of paper. Here's the surface area of this desktop, but what I want you to remember is, for instance, if we look at this thing over here, all right, did I ever show you this? Here's a nice ruler. Here's a meter stick. What's the surface area? What is this thing? It's a door. All right, how wide is it? How would we measure the surface area? The width times the height. So what's the width? Oh, look at that. It's 1 meter. This is a meter. And then how tall is it? Can we measure that? Yeah, pretty easily, right? So here's 1 meter. Here is exactly 2 meters. All right, so what's the surface area of this? It would be 1 times 2, or 2 square meters, right? So in most cases, in anatomy and physiology, when you think of surface area, I want you to think of this thing right here. What is this? It's a doorway. It's a doorway for exchange. A surface area is a doorway for exchange, where things can go from one room to another, one compartment or another, right? So the lining of your digestive tract has a surface area or a doorway for what? Exchange. And these little guys right here, all of these microvilli, increase the size of that doorway, because you could think of taking the top of the cell and making it perfectly flat. How would you make it perfectly flat? By stretching it out, right? So then the top of that cell gets a lot wider. And as the doorway gets bigger, how many people can move through the doorway at exactly the same time? Does it go up as the doorway gets bigger, or does it go down, or does it stay the same? It goes up, right? So if that was a big garage door right there, we could get 30 or 40 people through at one time, as opposed to just one or two with that size doorway, right? So surface area increases exchange. right? Like for absorption, for instance. Okay. All right, so let's go over here. So kind of know different kinds of epithelia. Membranes are real important right here. All right, so let's talk about some membranes. There are two major kinds of membranes in your body. I think I wrote them on the board. And I only see one kind on this figure right here. Oh, but this one here, I think I see two kinds of membranes. I see the yellow one. I see the yellow one. Ah, there's the cursor. Right? I see a yellow one and then whatever color these lines are right here. Oh, yeah, you're on the right track. There's a membrane that lines the cavity that's open to the outside world. And then there's a kind of membrane that lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world. So you should be familiar with that terminology. Open to the outside world is what we call a mucous membrane. A lot of goblet cells, especially in this trachea right here, a mucous membrane doesn't necessarily have to have goblet cells. It just has to be open to the outside world. Like the respiratory tract, the digestive tract is open to the outside world. Reproductive tract, open to the outside world, all lined with a mucous membrane. Right? But here is a cavity, right here. What cavity is that? That's the pleural cavity. Inside what cavity? Inside the thoracic cavity, which is inside what cavity? Ventral cavity, right? So make sure you can go back and forth with these different cavities. So indeed, you're right. Here's the pleural cavity. Now that's not a mucous membrane that's lining the pleural cavity. That's what we call a serous cavity. And a serous cavity is a little bit more complicated because it has three parts to it, right? It's got the one part that's right on top of the organ. So we call this a visceral organ because it's deep inside a body cavity. So this is the visceral serous membrane around the lungs. And you could call that the visceral pleura because pleura means, right, it means the lung. And then this membrane right here is not on the surface of the lung, but this is right on the body wall. That's the parietal division, right? So visceral division, parietal division, that's two of the three things. And then the third thing is this space right here, which is the serous cavity or pleural cavity, and it's filled with serous fluid, a little bit of serous fluid. Shouldn't be a lot of fluid in here. What might happen if you start to get a lot of fluid in here? Like if you have this much fluid, it's going to compress the lung, right? But you need that lung to inflate in order to breathe, right? So that's a really serious condition. We call that pleurisy. Then the same thing can happen to other kinds of cavities in the body, right? Like, for instance, fluid can build up not only in the pleural space right here, but also the pericardial space, right? So here is the pericardial cavity. The membrane right on the surface of the heart is the visceral pericardium, and this right here is the parietal pericardium. And then here is the pericardial space filled with serous fluid a little bit. Unless there's an infection of this area, then we'd call that pericarditis. And if this fills up with fluid, this is probably even more dangerous. Why is that? Because it's going to compress the heart. And in order for the heart to pump blood, it's got to relax and blood has got to fill it, right? It's got to flow into it. But if this space is filled with fluid and blood can't flow in, the heart might contract, but if there's no blood there, then it's not pumping blood, right? So that's a pretty serious condition too. Anybody know how to get rid of that fluid in a hurry? Just jab a needle in there and suck it out. Okay. Now, you probably would want to have some practice doing that, but it can make you feel better right away, believe it or not. Okay. We just call that aspirating that serous fluid out of there. Okay, here is another. What kind of membrane is this? This cavity right here, peritoneum, is that open to the outside world or not? It's not open to the outside world. It's closed. So what kind of membrane is it, mucus or serous? It's a serous, right? So here is a membrane right on the covering of some intestines right here. This is the visceral peritoneum. Here is the part right on the abdominal wall. That's the parietal peritoneum. And then there's some serous fluid in between them, right? And that also kind of lubricates these things because these things are moving around squishing food that you've eaten all the time. Okay, and what is an inflammation of this peritoneum called? Maybe you had an appendicitis and it actually burst. and you have all that infectious material floating around in here. What's that called? That's a peritonitis. That's an inflammation of the peritoneum. Okay? And if you have an appendicitis and it bursts, you might feel like you're going to die, but you don't necessarily have to. It's best to have it removed before it bursts, but not everybody is lucky to have that happen. All right, so here I see a nice penis right here with a tube going through it. Okay? And that tube is called the urethra. Okay? It's got a membrane on it. What kind of membrane is that? Okay? What are your two choices? What are the two general categories? Mucus or serous. So what kind is this one in here? That's a mucus because it's open to the outside world. All right. Okay. I just threw a curveball at you. Okay. So that's something about membranes. That's important to know. Okay. And the various kinds of muscle. How many different kinds of muscle tissue are there? Yeah, three. And if they're long linear cells that we call fibers, that's skeletal muscle. What are these attached to? And that's why they got named the way they got named. They're attached to your skeleton. So these are skeletal muscles. They just move bones around. They're under voluntary control. These striations right here, nice characteristic of it. We'll find when we look at muscles why they are there, why the striations are there. But it has to do with the internal machinery that makes a muscle cell get shorter. All right. Another kind is cardiac. It's similar to skeletal in that it has the same kind of machinery inside the cell that forms these striations, but it's different because these cells are what? Short. And they're also branched. There's another thing that distinguishes cardiac muscle from skeletal muscle. Involuntary. You can't control your heart. You can mess around with it with meditation techniques and things like that, but you can't cause your heart to beat right at a particular time or to stop, right? It's going to be controlled partly by itself, but also partly by the nervous system. These things are intercalated discs that help attach these cells together so when they contract and pull on each other, they don't pull apart, but also they connect each other electrically, which is pretty important. Because, for instance, when the heart contracts, you do not want this part down here at the bottom to contract, and then about 30 seconds later, this other part to contract. You want it to contract how? As a unit, right? So this electrical signal can move from one cell to the other, ensuring that the whole heart contracts as a unit. And in skeletal muscle, would you want those electrical connections? And what would be a good reason why you don't want skeletal muscle to have those electrical connections? Yeah, say you like, I like that marker over there on the table, right? So I'm going to reach out and pick up that marker. But if all my muscle cells, skeletal muscle cells, were connected together electrically, I'd reach like that, and what would happen? Your whole body would contract. Okay, that's not really voluntary control, right? Your heart is different. All right, so that's cardiac muscle. And then the third kind is smooth muscle. All right, and I don't see any striations in there. And some of these cells can be connected together electrically and sometimes not, depending on where the smooth muscle really is. But smooth muscle we find in walls of hollow organs, like the digestive tract, reproductive tract, respiratory tract, things like that. And under what kind of control is that? Do you have voluntary control? No, it's involuntary. All right, so no striations. And these cells are like stretched out footballs. They're not branched, but they're not linear either. They're kind of all just stretched out like that. Okay, so muscle. And then that takes us to, which was the next slide? Okay, nervous system. Let me see if I have a nice dark marker right here. Nervous tissue. Okay, hopefully you can see that. You know, I know how to, one of these days I'll learn how to project it on the screen, but I'm not sure I know how to do that or to get back to show you a slide. So I don't want to wreck the system that we have right now. So nervous tissue is made out of two kinds of cells. Two kinds of cells, so we got two to remember. All right. And remember when we started talking about tissues, you had to learn a bunch of names of cells, especially for the practicum. Like what name of cell did you have to know? Uh, Okay, I heard, but there were too many all at one time. Osteocyte. Great. Where do you find an osteocyte? In bone. Osteo means bone. Site means cell. That's a good one to know. A chondrocyte, kind of a companion to that, but that's found in cartilage. And then there's another one that makes fibers. Fibroblast, right? And then you've got a lymphocyte. Where was that? That was in blood, blood connective tissue. That's an immune cell. It's a white blood cell. What's another white blood cell that you had to know? Neutrophil, that's another immune cell. And then another cell in blood that's not for immune response but carries oxygen. That was a red blood cell or erythrocyte. So you had to know chemicals and names of cells. So let's know the names of some cells here too, but there's only two kinds. Okay? So you got neurons, N-E-U-R-O-N, a neuron, and then this one right here. I'll spell it first. Okay? Who can say this one? Yeah, that's close. I say neuroglia, but if you want to say neuroglial cell, that's fine. Okay? So a neuron is the electrical cell, right? So neurons transmit electrical impulses. So I'll say impulse right here. That's how most of your nervous system communicates with itself, the electrical impulses that are transmitted by neurons. Neuroglia, on the other hand, are support cells. They support neurons. So if you're going to pick one cell as being the most important in your nervous system, which one would you pick? Neurons. And that's what people did for hundreds of years. All right? And then some people sort of got interested in neuroglia and learned some very interesting properties of neuroglia. Now people are even more interested in neuroglia than neurons. All right? When we get to nervous system, we'll talk about some of those specific functions. But neuroglia help tell neurons how to connect up with each other, how to form a network. And that's even more important than just one neuron. How is a network established? All right? Neuroglia sometimes can stimulate more neurons to grow, right? And to form new kinds of connections between other cells. So neuroglia are important for learning. So your neuroglia right now are really stimulated because you're stressing your brain trying to learn a lot of new things. These neuroglia are telling these neurons to make new connections and speedier connections with each other. So these neuroglia right now are actually redesigning your brain this semester and next semester too if you keep taking some classes. So the brain that you had at the beginning of the semester won't be anything like the brain that you have when the semester is over. It'll have a different structure, which means that it will have a different function as well, right? It will be more functional because there'll be more connections in it afterwards. Okay, so if we look back up on the picture right here, we see these some examples of a couple of these cells on this micrograph. The one that's stained really dark, that's a neuron. And I see a nucleus with a little nucleolus in there. Right? This is what we call the cell body. This is the major part of the cell. And there is a Greek term, maybe it's a Latin term for body, that's called soma. So sometimes this is called the soma of a neuron or the cell body. And then there's some projections coming off the cell body right here. And we use a term that we first learned in bones. When there's a part of a bone that projects off the major body of the bone, or if there's a bump on a bone, three of the labs know this already, but the fourth lab this afternoon doesn't know this term yet. We call that a process. Okay, so a projection coming off the bone or a projection coming out of a cell is a process. Here is a process, and this is a really long, narrow one. This is what we call an axon. Okay, so that's how electrical information, and it kind of looks like a wire. And that's how an electrical impulse gets transmitted long distances. All right, so here's a neuron, here's one here, here's one here, here's one here. And then we see some nuclei of other cells that really don't have really long processes on them. These are the support cells, or you could say what? Neuroglial cells. And the peripheral nervous system, that means nerves in your arms and legs, have different kinds of neuroglia compared to neuroglia that are in your central nervous system, which is your brain and spinal cord. So we'll look at some of those. All right, so here we have a typical picture of a neuron. And here is the soma, or cell body, and there's the nucleus right there. Here are a number of very short projections or processes coming off. These are highly branched. These are what we call dendrites. This is the part of a neuron that receives information. This is the part that's listening for nerve impulses, right? I kind of use that figuratively speaking. It doesn't like have ears, but it has a way to tell when another neuron is trying to communicate with it, right? So this is the part of the neuron that receives signals. Then those signals travel down the dendrite into the cell body, and they get to the axon, and then the axon transmits the signal all the way down to the terminal end of the axon. And this axon right here can be very long, can be a number of feet or even a meter long, right? So this one axon could go all the way from your spinal cord to the tip of your toe, or from your brain all the way down to someplace in your spinal cord. So these are really, really long cells, but you still can't see them with your naked eye. Why is that? Because the diameter is still microscopic, right? They're really long, a macroscopic distance, but they're still microscopically thin. Okay, so which way does information flow? Is it a two-way street or a one-way street? One-way street, and how does it always flow? From dendrite to cell body down the axon. That's how information flows. So information can only flow in one direction. But your big toe can send information from itself up to your brain. Information does flow two directions in your body. How is that accomplished? You got to have two separate neurons, one like this and the other what? Backwards like that, right? And so then a nerve in your body can have two-way traffic because it's got different neurons going in different directions. Okay. And then these support cells right here determine how many dendrites you might have, how to connect up with other neurons. Okay, so that's the importance of these neuroglia or support cells. So that's really what you have to know about nervous tissue in terms of histology for the test. But somebody had a good question about nervous tissue, and I just want to ask, so did we kind of go over nervous tissue to answer most of your questions? That's not too bad, it's just those two cells. One are those electrical and the others are the support cells. Okay. So that's pretty good. Let me just look at some of these other slides right here. That's pretty good. That's not bad. All right, so I want to go to the next chapter, unless somebody's got a question about histology, and we can always go back too. That's no problem. The next chapter is integumentary system. All right, right here. And these are all the slides that you have for the integumentary system. This is a pretty good exam figure right here, right? So make sure you can label all of these different things. So here we see the integument with accessory structures. What are some accessory structures? Hair, nails, glands, and muscle. And I suppose we could even put in some nervous tissue there as well, some sensory receptors. I don't think your book does that, and I don't think I did that in your notes, but that's not a bad idea to put that in there as well. All right, so the integument has two main layers, right? And those are the epidermis, which is superficial. What kind of tissue is epidermis? Yeah, it's an epithelium, and then in particular, what kind is it? Stratified squamous, all right? So what's the function of the stratified squamous epithelium? Yeah, barrier and protection, right? It's used on surfaces that are rubbing all the time. We call that abrasion, right? So it protects you against abrasion. These cells slough off, but that's okay because the cells in the stratum basale will replace the ones in the stratum corneum that you lose, right? It's a barrier also because these keratinocytes in here secrete a glycolipid between the cells, and lipid is like, it's a water barrier, so that prevents dehydration. And since it's so thick, it prevents bacteria from getting in, but if there's a really ambitious bacteria or fungus that finds its way into your skin, there's even a cell inside the skin, inside the epidermis, that can kill it if it bumps into it. What's the name of that cell? And I would have to go to this slide right here to show you. And that is this little cell right here. That's called a Langerhans cell sometimes. Other times it's called a dendritic cell because of all these processes that kind of resemble what? Dendrites on a neuron. That's why sometimes it's called a dendritic cell. This one can crawl around, and when it finds something that doesn't belong, in the skin. It will phagocytize it and then lyse it by fusing it to a lysosome. And remember, a lysosome acts as an intracellular digestive system. It can digest chemicals or particles down. So that's the immune cell right here. So that's really a nice function of this stratified squamous epithelium. All right. So epidermis and then the dermis. What are the two layers of the dermis? Papillary, because these are papillary right here, these little projections, these little ridges. So this is the papillary layer. That is a loose areolar connective tissue. Not very strong. It's got some collagen, some elastic fibers, but not a lot. And indeed, the strongest layer is the deepest layer of the dermis, which we call the reticular layer. And that is a misnomer. Why is that a misnomer? Or it's just kind of named a little bit funny. Reticular could also mean a lot of branching, a lot of fibers going in all different directions. But reticular also means that it's a name of a fiber, which is what? Really thin and weak. But we know this area is not weak. It is strong. So what fiber does it have mostly?
Collagen.
Yeah, it's collagen. A lot of collagen. This reticular layer is dense, irregular connective tissue, loaded with collagen. And in your book, you actually have a pretty nice picture of that right here. You see all these collagen fibers in the reticular layer of the dermis. So here is the dermis in this area. So here's the papillary region. Here is the reticular layer. And you can see all the collagen right here. Okay. All right. So what else we see on this slide? Oh, we also see something that's not part of the integument, but it's a layer just underneath the skin. And it's adipose connective tissue. And that's the hypodermis, right? Hypo means below the dermis. Sometimes we also call this the subcutaneous layer because the skin, which is epidermis and dermis, sometimes we call that the cutaneous membrane. Cutaneous membrane. So when we say subcutaneous, we just mean what? Below the skin. Hypodermis is also sort of means the same thing, but hypodermis just means below the dermis. And of course, epidermis means above the dermis, right? So that should be easy to remember. All right, so those are the three main layers that I see on this slide, epidermis, dermis, and hypodermis. Other accessory structures that we see on this particular slide, we see a number of things. First, glands. Here is an eccrine sweat gland. Okay, so here's a bunch of coiled tubes. I forget exactly what kind of epithelium lines these tubes. It might be stratified cuboidal. You don't have to know that. Okay, but you know that epithelium also makes glands, like this one right here. So that creates sweat, right? And then under the proper conditions of when the autonomic nervous system tells your body that you're hot, then that will secrete salt and water to the surface of the skin. That water evaporates and that cools you down. And I want to review something about glands. There are two main categories for glands. What are the two main categories? I want to write this down on the board. Okay. Yeah, let's write that down. There's one kind that has ducts. Okay, I don't know what I did with that really nice pen. Let's see if this works. Glands. Nope. What about this one here? Glands. Okay. What are the two most general kinds of glands? One, two. Exocrine. Exocrine and endocrine. But we don't say that. We say endocrine. Okay. Endocrine gland. Okay. So those are the two examples. And this one right here is a perfect example of an exocrine gland. An exocrine gland produces a product that's secreted from a cell, and that product goes into a duct, and that duct carries it exactly where it belongs, directly to that one little point right there. So an exo, that's what happens when I talk and spell at the same time, or sometimes when I just try to spell. You know how that is. Okay, so exocrine gland has what? Ducts. It's a gland with ducts. And the product that it's making has to follow a duct to get to where it's going. An endocrine gland is ductless. It has no ducts. Nonetheless, that kind of gland is producing a product, it is secreting it, and how does that product get to where it's going if it doesn't have a duct? Yeah, an endocrine gland produces a compound called a hormone. That's its little signaling molecule, and the hormone is picked up by a capillary like this. So here's blood, and the blood takes that hormone all over the body. So that's how the product of an endocrine gland gets around. Not through a duct, but it's transported by the blood. All right, so can you see that that eccrine sweat gland right there is not an endocrine gland because it has a duct, and there's no capillary network around it to pick up a hormone, for instance. All right, so that's a nice exocrine gland. All right, there's another exocrine gland, and these are always associated with hair follicles. So here I see a nice hair follicle. Here's the shaft. That's the part of the hair that's above the surface of the skin. Here's the root and then the bulb of a hair follicle. And as a part of this hair follicle, I see like this tumor growing out of it right here. Does that look abnormal? As a matter of fact, it looks a little funny, right? It could be suspicious, but we know that this is an important sebaceous gland. That's normal and it belongs there. It secretes a compound called sebum, which is an oil, right? And so that just further helps protect the skin, or helps your body from dehydrating, and it helps protect the skin from cracking and drying out, and it also allows this hair follicle to grow smoothly, or this hair shaft to grow smoothly out of the hair follicle right here, right? So that sebum kind of acts like a lubricant as well. All right, so those are two of the three glands that you have to know for lab. You got the eccrine, which is a typical sweat gland. Here's a sebaceous gland secreting sebum. And the third kind that we don't see right here on this slide is called an apocrine gland. And it's about 3 or 4 times bigger than this eccrine sweat gland here, and you only have them in the axillary region and inguinal region. They don't secrete sweat, but they secrete more of an organic material, and that's what gives us our particular kinds of body odor, okay? Because bacteria can live in that organic secretion, all right? But that secretion also helps your skin stay healthy and young as well, all right? So the purpose is not for odor, but to help your skin. All right, what other accessory structure haven't we talked about yet that I see right here? We talked about glands. Talk about hair. Nails we didn't talk about. Good. So that's one thing I want to cover. Plus something else that's on this slide. There's a muscle, okay? And that muscle is the arrector pili right here. One end is connected to the hair follicle, the other to the dermis right here. And what's that function of muscle again? To shorten or contract. And so this muscle is going to pull the root of the hair up toward the epidermis right here, causing a little bulge in your skin, which is what we call a goosebump. But it's also, these hairs kind of lie down flat, all right? And so it's also going to pull the hair up straight and give you a goosebump as well, all right, when you're cold or anxious, this arrector pili muscle. Okay, let's see, was there something else I wanted to say? Oh, yeah, we can't quite leave the integument yet. Okay, I think that's pretty good for this diagram. There is a discussion of a diagram that's very similar to this on my website, which is a video tutorial, which you can look at. And also in Blackboard, there are 3 videos, all right, that talk about the integument in my documents. Do I have Blackboard loaded up? Oh, I do have Blackboard loaded up over here. Is it there? Yeah, it's right there. So under course documents, all right, here are a bunch of videos. Here is integument 1, which is probably epidermis. Here's integument 2, which is probably dermis. And then integument 3 are probably all the accessory structures in the skin that you could look at. And that probably would help you for the lecture test on Wednesday, but of course for the practicum next time, because these are the models that we have in lab right here. Okay. All right, so here is a nice illustration that shows from here to here. What is this, from here to here? What is that? Yeah, that's the epidermis, right? Nice stratified squamous epithelium, some interesting cells. All right, well, they switched this figure out on you. Okay, I like the older figure a lot better. And you have a copy of the older figure, but I'm not sure you have a key to how to label that figure. All right, so where would we find that exam figure? In the exam, yeah, in Blackboard, in the exam study guide. Okay, so here's the exam study guide with figures, right? We went over this. And where's that figure at? Oh, look at all those membranes. Cell, oh, can you name all those organelles in there? We can practice that. Membranes, mitosis, right? Different cell shapes. Okay. Oh, what's that? Reticular. Ah, what's that? Areola. Ooh, what's that? Blood. You guys are good. Okay. All right. All right. So there's that figure. This is the figure that you no longer have. So I want to go over this one. Okay. And let's see if I can get it displaying exactly right. Okay, this is not bad. Okay, so can you see that this figure on the left-hand projector is similar to one on the right-hand projector? It's supposed to be the same one, okay? But it's a little bit different. Okay, so over here we have dermis. And where's the dermis over here? Can you see my little cursor, just barely visible? That's dermis, right? So here we've got epidermis, from here all the way up to this apical region. Now, I don't know if I can get a pointer to show up in a PDF document. Oh, it goes away when I'm on a, when I'm actually on the figure, okay? All right, well, let's go over the layers, okay? Let's go over some layers. So here's dermis, and all this is epidermis. What's the deepest layer called? Stratum basale. Stratum basale. And it's one or two cell layers thick, usually one. And what is interesting about this layer, which you can see clearly on this illustration, but not so clearly on the other? What's happening with that cell? Right where I have, can you see where the cursor is? Right here, can you see a little motion artifact maybe? Right there? Metaphase, yeah, mitosis, which means these cells are dividing, these cells are proliferating, right? This is the living layer of the epidermis. These are where the cells are reproducing themselves. And here you can see a cell right in metaphase. All right, we see another kind of cell, like this one here and this one here. That corresponds to, I'm sorry, I flipped to the other screen. It corresponds to this one right here. These are the melanocytes. What's the job of a melanocyte? It produces a pigment, and you got to know the name of that pigment. It's called melanin, right? And it's a dark pigment. It's a natural sunscreen that protects your skin from the harmful effects of the sun. And when it produces melanin, it can break off and other cells can pick it up. So these cells right here have picked up little granules of melanin, so it's protecting these cells now as well. Okay, so stratum basale, and then here is a tactile cell. Sometimes we call that a Merkel's disc. That's for very light pressure, light touch, and so or vibration. And in lab I mentioned that some people can even read with this cell. How would they read with this cell right here? Braille. Like for Braille, feeling little bumps on a piece of paper, for instance. Okay, and then this cell will stimulate this neuron, and that neuron takes that information to the brain. All right, so that's stratum basale. The next layer right here, which I kind of like in the other diagram a little bit, but now I can see some bridges forming between these cells. And let's flip to the other screen. I see some of these little bridges here forming between these cells. These are desmosomes that are connecting the cells together, and it will deform these cells a little bit by giving them really sharp corners, little spiked edges all over the place. So that's what we call the stratum spinosum. And then, of course, they're going to be pushed up to the surface because the stratum basale is still growing, pushing these cells up. That takes us to the next layer, and I'm going to flip to the other screen over here. And now I can see in this layer right here a bunch of granules in these cells. These are granules filled with prekeratin and a glycolipid, which will be secreted from the cell. But prekeratin is a chemical that's going to make these cells really hard, which is going to give a lot of strength to your skin, even though there's no collagen in an epithelial layer. That keratin will give some strength to these cells. And the glycolipid that will be secreted outside the cell will act as a water barrier or vapor barrier. So that's what gives your your cutaneous membrane, its saran wrap like qualities, that glycolipid. Remember, because fats and water don't mix. Water can't get through a lipid layer. And then the dead layer up over here, because it's far away from blood vessels in the dermis, that's the stratum corneum. Okay? And you should know that there are two kinds of skin, which are thick and thin. Which one is this one right here? This is thin because it's missing a layer. Thick skin has an additional layer, which we would see, okay, right in here, stratum lucidum. So where do I have a picture of that? Stratum lucidum, right between the granulosum and stratum corneum. Okay, so I have that on the screen on the right-hand side. So here is an example of thick skin. Notice the stratum corneum is a lot thicker. Here, that white line right here, that represents the stratum lucidum. Lucid means clear. And then the stratum granulosum underneath it. What's the layer right underneath the granulosum? Stratum spinosum. And then the deepest layer is the stratum basale with the living cells. And maybe if we had a nice magnifying glass, we could see some cells in mitosis in this region right here. Also, in the stratum basale, what are some other cells we have? We have some other cells in the stratum basale besides the ones that make these keratinocytes up over here, these flat cells. We have some that make pigment. Yeah, the melanocytes are in this area too, right? And those tactile cells are in this area, right? But don't forget about those melanocytes. Oh, let me go back over to the other screen. This cell right here, this is an immune cell. Okay, it used to be called a Langerhans cell. And what the heck is it called now? Dendritic cell. Thank you. Dendritic cell, because all these little processes sticking off of it like that reminded somebody of a dendrite coming off of a neuron, right? Dendritic cell right here. All right, so make sure you can label this figure right here, know your layers, right, by next week. But after you practice that a couple times, you know, if you're having trouble remembering those layers, maybe don't use the study guide that has the illustration already for you, and all you have to do is label. Start with a blank piece of paper and start to draw it yourself, just from a blank piece of paper, and then you should be able to remember it with ease for the test, right? Because on the test, you don't have to draw. All you have to do is label. Okay. What does abrasion mean? Oh, I forgot to pass the sign-in sheet around. Oh, well. It's probably too late. What's abrasion mean? That's when you're rubbing together. What kind of epithelium is designed to withstand abrasion? Stratified squamous, like we find in the inside of our mouth or skin, right? Other layers. All right, anybody else have a question on the test coming up? Okay, you got to focus on those exam study guides, right? That's where you can synthesize a lot of information, answer those questions, and you should have fun on the test coming up on Wednesday. Don't forget your ID.